Hey folks, we're back. It's a good life, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 81.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's a good life, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 81. We're very pleased to have Nick Stillman as a guest tonight in the house. From Arts Council New Orleans, we're going to be talking about LunaFet. We're going to be talking about the Arts Council. We're gonna introduce Nick proper in here in just a second. Just a quick bit of housekeeping at the top, Jeff Spence. We had a elephant in the room. We had a little bit of a layoff.
Yeah, we took some time off. Ego Jubilee had a Monday residency during the month of November that. I mean, normally we record on Mondays and Wednesdays.
Right.
And Ego Jubilee, we had to play every Monday in November, which made it really difficult because they had to get out of here by like 8 o'clock, basically. So Mondays were kind of difficult. Wednesdays were difficult because also I started playing in another band.
Right.
And we were having rehearsals on Wednesday night. With a band called the Green Demons, and in preparation for a show that we had a couple of weeks back, and so we had to shift over to Tuesdays, and Tuesdays just weren't always available either.
And I don't know if it's like,
yeah, you were busy at work, yeah. Right? Exactly.
And but you know what? We talked and about other to like, things, look, John Oliver and Bill Maher takes off around Thanksgiving, so why don't we?
Well, I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, it's like it gets busy. It's a podcast.
We had to recharge the batteries.
We had to recharge the batteries, as it were. Exactly. I'm taking the brunt of the blame here. You certainly have your own share of blame.
That's right.
For our time off as well, but I'll leave that up to you.
Well, we'll get into it. We'll tease part two tonight. It's going to be just us chickens, me, Spence, and Jeff, and we're going to get into what's been going on the last few weeks, and maybe I will divulge a little bit what's been happening.
Okay, good.
But part one... Arts Council New Orleans, Nick Stillman in the house. Hello, Nick.
Thanks yep. Hey, guys. Us. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
How you doing tonight?
Doing okay. Dealing with some back pain. We've been setting up LunaFet over the past several days, but it's out there. We're ready. And I hope all of New Orleans comes tomorrow night to opening night.
Good, good. Did you guys have like a dress rehearse like last night or tonight?
Yeah, so
tonight?
We're having a media preview kind of right now. Uh-huh. And that's where we all see the work for the first time occupying public space, which is kind of a big moment. I mean, this whole thing is theoretical and in our heads, and we don't know how it's all going to interact together.
We've seen it on computer screens.
We've seen it on computer screens. And, yeah. and much of this work has never actually existed in reality yet. It's made for, it's site-specific work that is being made for this particular event. So we're actually seeing things come to life, and we're seeing things take shape organically as a whole for the first time. So this is a surreal and fun night, the sort of dress rehearsal night that we have.
Okay,
so
we're speaking a little bit in abstractions right now.
Folks who don't know who maybe what we LunaFet could is. Yeah. Well, in a nutshell, what's LunaFet? Just for the folks don't know what it is.
LunaFet is something the Arts Council of New Orleans developed in 2014, and the overarching concept is that we invite artists to create large-scale works of art in public space outside that are made with light and technology. And in America, this is pretty uncommon, that we're actually, at this point, the Arts Council in the city of New Orleans is the longest-running light-based art event that has happened in consecutive years in the country.
Wow.
That's a cool accomplishment. The inspiration for this is actually in Lyon, France, where something like this has been happening for over a century. So we like the kind of signification, the alignment with France, with whom we share so much as a culture and as a city. I think it's appropriate. We're talking kind of about the tricentennial moment, the tricentennial year is upon us. But also I think we're doing something really, really unique, big picture, and certainly in an American context.
You know, I just want to say this for shits and giggles right now, is that Joel used to run a company that was involved in just this kind of production.
Yep.
And I recall Joel, he had a company called Spitball Media, and they did
site-specific media installations.
Site-specific media installations. I could never say it.
Projection mapping.
Exactly.
Projection domes, projection tunnels.
So this, you know, much of this work is what we're trying to produce at LunaFed. So we will speak further about this. And, you know, one, I think the interesting thing is that I feel as if when you see LunaFed for the first time, you see the projection mapping on Gallier Hall.
That's right.
And it's big and it's unmissable. It's like fireworks. It's the visual equivalent of fireworks.
Everyone's got their phones out.
Yeah. I think what we're interested in doing is showing that there are many different kinds of ways to make contemporary art with light and technology. And so while we're very proud of the projection mapping work and we have a new piece this year, we're also trying to do something pretty different every year.
Sure. So like kinetic sculpture, like kind of thing?
Kinetic sculpture, stuff that, interactive stuff, things that are interacting with architecture. We're really trying to show that there are many examples of artwork that can be made with light.
Also, scale is really interesting to me because you have on the one end, you have Gallier Hall, but something on a very small, like shoebox scale, could be just as fascinating.
It's
interesting.
Honestly, like the Gallier Hall piece is great, and it deserves the accolades. You know, the artist put a ton of time and energy and work, as you know.
And it is the fireworks show.
The fireworks show.
And it's a lot of lumens.
However,
a lot of resolution.
That's right. However, there, I really like the kind of quieter moments that can happen in LunaFed also.
Like Easter eggs or like stumbled upon. Kind
yeah. of. And, you know, I think, again, we're relatively young. So, you know, year four is not a huge track record, but, I like that now we're beginning to develop a reputation that LunaFed is not just something that happens in Lafayette Square, but it actually extends all the way down the pedestrian street, Lafayette Street, to connect with Fulton Alley. And, you know, to use the Easter eggs concept, there are pieces dotting that walkway all the way down. I think our numbers have shifted somewhat because we've had some last minute entrants. I think we have 24 pieces in the event.
24 different artists.
Told this year, 24 different installations.
Yeah, wow.
So, you know, there's a lot more than what you might see most obviously in Lafayette Square.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
And where do those other 24, the things that are not in Lafayette Square, where do they take place?
They are situated along Lafayette Street, which is a pedestrian street that comes off of Lafayette Square.
Right, oh, okay.
It's kind of a pedestrian walkway, really beautiful, somewhat underused, I think, here in New Orleans.
Agreed.
And LunaFed's a nice context for it because you know, the crowds can just kind of take over that that area freely, and it feels really nice. And it goes all the way to Fulton Alley, where it connects with a concurrent event that Harrah's is throwing called Miracle on Fulton, that's designed as a holiday bazaar of sorts.
Right. Yeah, I was involved in a little festival called Illuminated City, and they started after you guys, but so they're probably in year three now.
Where was that?
In Portland, Oregon.
Okay, yep.
So it's led by the architecture department at Portland State University, and then they got together with architecture firms, and they got together. Like, my ex-creative partner does a big installation. A lot of the guys that I worked with out there artists who are doing installations out there, and they do it specifically during the winter because there's so little light in Portland for 4 months. There's
super
just not
important.
Any light, right?
As little light as possible is what makes this work really sing.
Yeah, exactly. But this idea, though, is like, we're so deprived of light for so many months. Let's give people a reason to go outside in the dog days of winter where it hasn't stopped drizzling rain and it's just super dark from November to February.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I love that. And our context here was, we kind of looked around in 2014 and it felt like contemporary art was really rising in New Orleans, and you had this Silicon Bayou technology community that was rising at the same time. And we felt like there wasn't anything that really provided a platform for those sectors to connect.
Yeah.
And so LunaFed was that attempt. And I mean, let's face it, as New Orleanians, people congregate in public space here. People congregate in public space, and celebrate being together and celebrate being with friends and family. And that's so right. LunaFit kind of felt like a natural fit here for that reason.
That's what's great about New Orleans, is because, I mean, a light festival in Portland is just going to be somewhat staid. It just is. It's just not going to have that vibe that you're talking about, that people are just game to going outside. They're game to bring in their coolers. They're, you know, they're into that sort of human connection and that gathering thing, right? It's just not that way in so many communities, very specifically Portland.
The way that LunaFit has sort of organically developed here, I think, has blown my mind, certainly, and all of our minds, just to see. It was honestly something that we just hoped anyone would care and hoped anyone would show up in the first year.
Yeah, yeah.
And to see at the end of the week that people were coming out there with their lawn chairs and That's their right. coolers was like, this is happening. People That's right. are doing what they do in New Orleans at our thing. That's and that right. felt incredibly gratifying. And it's just grown organically up to now, where we have a title sponsor. We have yeah. Pan American Life.
Shout out to Pan American title Life. Sponsor. They're our only Fortune 500 company based in New Orleans.
And it's, you know, it's, I think people, especially in the art community, want to feel a certain way about working with a corporation who's a title sponsor. That, you know, signifies that, you know, maybe you're becoming staid or whatever.
Yeah.
That hasn't been our case at all. The relationship with Pan American Life has basically allowed us to produce the event that we knew we could produce all along. We just didn't necessarily have enough money.
Now you have the resources.
And so
yeah.
We have a little more resource. We're a little more resourced with Pan American Life support, and it brings credibility.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
have a company like that kind of sign on and say we're with you in just year four, yeah. a young event, feels like, okay, we're like playing in the big
yeah,
leagues.
Congrats. Good on you. How are the artists primarily from New Orleans, or are they from all over the country or world?
So I think our number is 24 discrete installations this year. Of that, I believe 21 are New Orleans-based.
Nice.
So we're almost exclusively, almost, a New Orleans-based event.
Well, that's our Arts Council, primary part of the Arts Council mission is to support local artists, right?
It really is our mission. I mean, right. our mission in our mission reads that we demonstrate that art is capable of transforming communities. Implicitly, we're working with local artists to do that. And that's what we want to do. We want to support and sustain a community of local artists here so that New Orleans remains the most creative and unique and interesting city in America.
Yeah.
That's what we do. And all along, we felt like LunaFit, okay, so we're working with our video mapping projection on Gallier Hall this year. It's a Mexican studio. Prior to this year, it was a French studio. That's great. It's an incredibly specialized technology. And, you know, to have global artists who are making this work at a very high level work here is amazing. Part of what those artists do also is interact with and work with our New Orleans-based artists.
Right.
So that year over year, we're kind of increasing our local artists' capacity to make work like this at this level.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. So, in getting back to Pan America, I mean, before, I was very curious in year one, and I'm always asked this question whenever we have someone from the arts on who's doing great work, is, you know, how are you getting your funding? I assume there was probably a lot of grants in those first couple of years, or
we hustle.
Was it private funding?
We
or
hustle.
Combination?
So, yeah. LunaFit is not publicly funded, and when you look around, both nationally and internationally, actually, these light-based events, because they're expensive, the technology is expensive,
yep.
the security is expensive, the infrastructure is expensive, it's all expensive. And normally this kind of work is municipally funded. That's not our context.
That's right.
We hope that that becomes true. But
that is in Europe.
it certainly yeah. it is in Europe. And,
right.
And when we look around at other, I'd be curious to know Portland's history, as we look around at some of the other light-based art events that have manifested in the last couple, 3 years, a lot of those are municipally funded. And
yeah.
so we are not. And that makes the investment and the belief from a company like Pan American Life so important. But in addition to that, we piece it together. We hustle for all of it.
Yeah.
Good. So there are some grants. There's a lot. There's a significant amount of corporate support, which is something I'm really proud of. Corporations have wanted to sort of plant their flag in something like LunaFit that has, we're a tricentennial signature event. So were part of the tricentennial effort both in 2017 and in 2018. And I think it gives a sense of visibility and a sense of cachet to those corporations. Companies are having their holiday parties at LunaFet.
Nice.
That's great. I love that. Wow. I love that. It's a completely unique and unforgettable experience. And I love that corporations are able to look at us, or we're able to look at them and sort of see each other as adding value to each other.
Great. So, folks, we know LunaFet is starts tomorrow night, which is Wednesday, December the 6th, runs through December the 9th. It's 6 to 9. For more information, the website is...
We're artsneworleans.org.
Great, great. So you can get more information there. And then I downloaded the app on the iPhone, and the
Good.
App is killer. That's what you want to do, folks. They have it for both iOS, Android, etc. And the app has so much information, has a really nice map, has information on every artist. If you're really curious and you want to get, you know, tease yourself before you get out there, or even when you're out there and know what you're looking at and have some information, download that app.
Is it just the LunaFet app?
Just search LunaFet in the App Store and you'll get it. The app was made by a local technology company called Lookfar. And God, it's just great.
It's really super high end.
In the past, we've, you know, like we were talking a couple minutes ago, some people have come to us after the event and said, I thought LunaFet was just in Lafayette Square. I didn't know about all the other stuff. Now with the app, you really have no excuse.
Right, exactly, Well, good. Well, I hope, I know you did about 50,000 people last year. What are you guys hoping to do? Do you have a target?
You know, we actually say 60,000 last year,
okay.
And I think that was conservative. I think we were more than that. This year with the tricentennial backing, with just it being year four instead of year three, I think we might be 75 or more. But then again, you know, weather concerns me.
We have a cold,
but it's a rain or shine event, and I think the city has proven that they want to support LunaFet, and they want LunaFet to exist here in New Orleans. I think people think it's a cool thing that continues to make the city unique. I expect people are going to come regardless.
Good, good. Yeah, I wonder, probably the average Joe doesn't understand what a unique and special event that it is for New Orleans to host, because that just doesn't happen in other cities.
Yeah, you know, I really like it when people, I tell them what I do. I say I'm the CEO of the Arts Council. They're like, well, I'm not an art guy. I'm not an art gal. Okay, that's fine. I think LunaFet is one, you know, of the many things that we do, LunaFet is a very easy way to just kind of plug into the idea that art is capable of transforming public space.
Yeah, right.
It's capable of transforming how people interact together. And we're not necessarily asking you to come out here and put your hands behind your back and stare at a wall and whisper in hushed tones. LunaFet isn't like that at all. It's a it's a family-friendly event. We've got food and beer and alcohol out there.
Yeah, if you like getting in your car and going down those streets that are kind of like the streets that are kind of neighborhood famous for having the really good Christmas lights on the houses, you're going to like LunaFet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you like lights, if you like pretty lights.
Exactly,
not,
yeah.
It's not so much art. Yeah. It is art, but it's not just art.
You might even like it a little bit
better. There are a lot of ways to interpret it, and that's what I like about it. And if you're just someone who likes to think about how public space could be different feel different,
that's right.
You know, that's I think there's kind of a planner or an architect lens that you can look at. Well,
that's the reason the architects were interested in Portland, because their whole bag is like, we live in one of the darkest cities in the country, right? For 6 months of the year, it's just, I mean, even during the day it's dark, and without light the details of architecture go away. So everything that's pretty about our city goes away for 4 months practically, except for maybe a few hours here and there, right? So the whole idea is that we can bring out detail with light. Right, let's shine light on what's already existing beautiful architecture, right?
Yep.
So that is an interesting perspective. There's a lot of ways to look at it. And then just to geek out from a technology perspective, I mean, I can tell you the software that's being used, the projection mapping, is pretty phenomenal. You know, the mapping is pretty intense, and you can see it from a layman's perspective and to scratch your head and wonder. You can go to, like, you know, there's a lot of people that'll go to the front of house tech booth or whatever and just peek in and see what they're doing back there, right?
It's incredibly sophisticated. And, you know, just the way that even, again, we developed this event here in 2014, even to see the advances in the technology since then has been...
That's right.
Has been cool. And I'm not necessarily, like, that is not my world. The specificities of the technology is not necessarily my thing. But, you know, you can see it. You can see the developments and the advancements. And, God, the amount of work that the video mapping artists put into making these projections that are made very site specifically for to essentially map and fit the contours of architecture is it's a feat.
Right. Well, then they do what I say loosely is interactive, in the sense that you'll see that clearly they did a lot of times. What these artists will do is they'll replicate in their studio the facade, and then they'll film someone like jumping from. So I think I saw some of that from last year. I saw some things where it was clear to me that they did some things in their studio on a replica facade of the building, where they clearly filmed some things. So it wasn't just, we're going to map content to this. We actually did some things and filmed some things, or did some animation that's specific for a character or something interacting with the architecture of the building, like climbing in and out of a window, for example, right? Which is pretty fascinating stuff. Plus, you have one of the best projectionists in the country, Scott Thompson, working for you. And I don't think, you know, people know that because New Orleans is such an event production, heavy event production town, because of the Super Bowls, the Mardi Gras, whatever. We have a lot of talent here, you know. And Scott Thompson, who's your projectionist, is one of the best.
Scott's been amazing. You know, he's been working with us since our second year, and he's just in addition to being super talented, he's just really committed to the event running without a hitch.
That's right.
He really wants to see it succeed as much as we do. And, you know, that's invaluable to have someone on your team like that.
Scott will work until it's done, and then the show starts, and he's got his little hammock that'll hang in the...
Yeah, that's right. I've seen that.
That'll hang in the tech booth. Yeah. Just take a nap once it shows up and running. But he won't go home.
Yeah.
So LunaFed, everybody. We'll plug it again at the end of the podcast. But Arts Council New Orleans, you guys are doing lots of, you know, LunaFed's not the only thing you guys are doing. You know, I was looking at your website, and I mean, why don't I just let you tell us what you guys are up to, and then maybe I'll have some follow-up questions based on some stuff.
Yeah, so LunaFed, I think, just because of the nature of the event and the crowds that it attracts, it's kind of the most visible way to plug into what we do. It's definitely not all of what we do, but it's interestingly microcosmic or macrocosmic, whatever. I think what we are in a position to do right now in this city at this moment is plug contemporary artists into the process of re-envisioning public space. Yep. And we have public space that is, you know, just as a community and as a city, is constantly being reimagined, right? I mean, I think New Orleans, in addition to other communities like Detroit and, you know, other communities that have similar challenges and opportunities, where there's disinvestment, there's blight, there's also incredible historical character, incredible architectural character. When you have that kind of collision of things, you have the potential for a really interesting moment for artists. And so I think something that we have the capability of doing, especially as we now move into a new political administration in City Hall, is to involve artists in a very real and significant way in the process of reimagining city infrastructure and reimagining the way that our city looks, the way our city actually operates. You know, we're the city's official arts agency. And so if we can propose solutions to our government and our populace that make sense financially, that makes sense operationally, and make our city more unique and more interesting, that seems like everybody wins.
Is the Broad Plus Water project an example of that?
So that's a good example. That's, you know, we sort of oscillate between titles with that piece, between Broad Plus Water and Turning. This was a piece that that debuted at LunaFed last year as sort of a prototype, and now is permanently installed on the Lafitte Greenway. And yeah, it's an example of that. It's sort of it's educating the public about the amount of the sort of our relationship to water as a city. It's also making public space that I think people have criticized as underperforming, the Lafitte Greenway. I mean, sure. We're all happy that there's a greenway.
That's right.
I think we all want there to be an increased level of care and infrastructure and safety built into it.
Yeah.
And public art is something that does that.
Yeah.
You know, another example of thinking about public art, and we're interested, I think, as a team, this current staff at the Arts Council is interested in public art that can also play a utilitarian role. And that's not to say that utility is the end-all be-all of how we think about things. It isn't. I think there's certainly a place for work that is challenging intellectually and theoretically in and of itself, regardless of its utilitarian value. But I do think that we are in a particularly good position to work with partners so that we can do things like, okay, we have LunaFed. LunaFed is a really nice event that the Arts Council produces across four nights in December. That's great. I think we can also say, because we're training New Orleans-based artists to work with light in the way that we are, what if we as a city came together to think about investing in artists to creatively and interestingly, sure, but also totally functionally light our many super dark urban areas that make residents and tourists alike feel unsafe. I mean, no one likes to walk into an area that feels underlit, it feels unsafe. And so if we could put artists to work doing super creative and also functional lighting design that actually sheds light on our public spaces that feel unsafe because they lack nocturnal lighting, both in neighborhoods, under overpasses.
I think that's a great idea.
That seems like everybody wins.
There's all kind of small scale, formerly Nord or currently Nord parks that are underutilized, not being used, in some really, you know, for lack of a better word, downtrodden neighborhoods throughout New Orleans. Like if you get out toward New Orleans East or out by Desire, the formerly Desire housing project, in those kind of areas. And right across the street here, Stallings was like that for a long time, you know. And it's not creative lighting like what you're talking about, but the basic idea of this park across the street and bringing it back into a place where, like, it's used, it might even be used right now, probably is. Yeah, I see some people playing basketball out there right now. Every night there's somebody playing basketball. I would say 2 to 3 nights a week there's people playing that, like, mini version of soccer out there. The pool is used in the summertime. The kids' playground over here is used. It's all because they put the lights on. This park, this entire park right here, was not used for years and years and years for exactly the reason that you're talking
and
about.
And I'm interested not only in, you know, stuff that might feel a little bit esoteric or, like, you know, pretty unique, but, for example, a city needs benches. A city needs trash cans. A city needs bike racks. This is basic infrastructure.
Sure.
We can...
Spencer, everybody.
Artists can build this. We can have sculptors and welders and designers building creative infrastructure for the city at approximately the same cost and be supporting a base of creative people that I think everyone feels like we want to retain. Like, we don't want New Orleans to become so expensive or so dismissive of our creative citizenry that they all leave. And this is a way that we can demonstrate an investment in the creative people who live here and want to live here.
It's very WPA updated to 2017.
Yeah, I love WPA theory is something that I think is really important, and as much as I think people recognize it as really important in playing a role for its time, I think the thinking is still totally relevant to involve, to invest intentionally in artists as something that makes your life in this place feel worthwhile.
Well, we still live with it here in New Orleans this many years later, because most of the planning and implementation of the construction and art in City Park in New Orleans is WPA.
That's right.
Or it's an outgrowth of WPA.
New Orleans is a great WPA city. I think that's...
The hill at the Audubon Zoo, the only hill in New Orleans.
Monkey Hill. Right, yeah.
There are a lot of examples. And I think that's, this is maybe for a different podcast, but I think that's a cool story. That's a cool New Orleans story that a lot of people haven't necessarily pieced all the components together, sort of the history of the WPA in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. For sure. You know, I don't think that a lot of people really, I'm just reiterating what you're saying, that they don't necessarily recognize it. But I mean, even the concrete streets have the stamp in them still.
Right.
That says WPA 1937
right.
or something like that, which is really kind of amazing. Like,
yeah.
We're still driving cars on roads that those people built.
And we as an arts council continue to hear stories of murals or kind of public sculptures being uncovered as buildings are being renovated or torn down.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We hear things like this.
I mean, obviously, the old airport, you know,
that's
it's
right.
a great
the
example.
Lakefront Airport,
the Lakefront Airport's a great example. The murals that are on the wall on the second floor.
Recently restored,
right, exactly. God, that's totally that amazing. It is an amazing, folks.
It's a great field trip.
Let me just say this, okay, one thing to people, not to sound smug or anything like that, but I'll go for it, is like a lot of people are new to New Orleans, obviously understand the lore and the fact that we're next to a river, but not necessarily everybody understands that we have a lake as well. And the lake is a beautiful place to go and hang out, ride your bike, recreate, do all kinds of things. But there are all of these features out by the lakefront that are WPA features that are amazing. There are shelters along the way that you can use and bathrooms, and there's like a big fountain out there that has like most of the old Mardi Gras crews that surround it, and then of course, you know, there's kind of the crown jewel is the airport, recently reemerging as the crown jewel of that stretch of lakefront property, and it is a it's a WPA era miracle, you know, mini miracle, and if you know the facade of that building. It's an Art Deco facade, right? If I'm being correct about the architecture, but it was covered up, you know, when people had the cockamamie notion that somehow you could survive a nuclear blast in a facility that was above ground, just by reinforcing the walls, the exterior walls with, I don't know, lead-lined concrete or something right. like that. And so this beautiful facade to the old airport, they covered it up because it was, am I telling the story right here? Because I think that I
don't know
right.
this history, but I do know that the incredible facade was covered up, and
it
the
was.
Logic sounds
yeah.
Like it was probably correct.
It was something along those lines. And so it was supposed to be like a municipal defense facility or something like that. And so they just, you know, as they were wont to do at a certain era in American history, like putting in drop ceilings and things of that nature,
right.
They covered it up, you know, something that was amazing because they were of the opinion that it was already passé. And in the last, I want to say 5 years or something like that, I think that work was completed, the restoration work, and it is gorgeous. It's an amazing thing. And they redid the interior. And it's just like, if you like planes and art, and to be in the presence of this kind of like golden age of aviation,
yeah.
you know, where it was kind of like translating from like single wing, from biplanes to single wings and things of that nature. There are these beautiful murals that are on the second floor. There may be some on the first floor as well. And terrazzo tile and all kinds of like things that you can't really see in the public space anymore. And there is this great, diner as well, and you can watch the planes take off and land.
Big windows that overlook the runway.
With the lake as a backdrop.
It's
just,
it's something else.
It's kind of a great New Orleans secret.
It is. Right, I feel like
the television program Mad Men kind of ushered in this appreciation or fetishism of a different era, the accuracy of a different era.
Sure.
The lakefront airport and kind of walking through it now and experiencing everything you guys just described, it achieves that.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's good stuff.
For sure.
So, Nick, man, where are you from?
I grew up in rural Maine.
Okay. What brought you to New Orleans?
I haven't lived in Maine for a long time. I lived in Maine until I was 18. I went to college. And then I moved to New York City. I moved to New York on September 6, 2001.
Oh, wow.
So about a week before September 11th. And then I moved to New Orleans in 2010 for no better reason, really, than I liked how I felt here. I liked how I saw things. I liked how I thought.
Yeah.
I just liked how I felt.
Yeah. That's interesting to say you like how you were thinking, because that it is interesting that with the environment and how you start to perceive and think and process thoughts differently based on the environment you're in.
It's very real.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So you've been here like 7 years. Wow. And so you've kind of had a pretty quick rise in the scene. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been very linear. I moved here and initially thought, so my background is in contemporary art. When I lived and worked in New York, I was involved in contemporary art in sort of all of its facets. So I wrote about it. I was a curator. I was making work at some point. I was in my 20s. I was trying to do everything, and I moved to New Orleans because I liked it, and thought, okay, I'm gonna try to hone in and just be a writer. I'm gonna write.
Yeah.
And that I found stressful, ultimately, to not know where your next paycheck is coming from.
Sure.
Just the life of a freelancer, of an artist, you might argue, was one that stressed me out. And so that was good self-knowledge to have. Right. I started teaching art history at the University of New Orleans, which is a wonderful experience. And did that for a couple of years. I became a sports writer at the Times-Picayune for a couple of years after that. And then I started working at the Arts Council in 2013 as the deputy director.
Okay.
And became the CEO in 2015.
Well, nice. Yeah. And what are your impressions of the art scene in New Orleans?
You know, I get asked that question a lot. As you can imagine, it's... I think the art scene here is great and incredibly unique. There's really nothing, if we're talking about New Orleans as, if we're talking about microcosms, the art scene of New Orleans is like perfectly microcosmic of the city itself, in that you have this really, real mix of, I guess, what you might describe as like folk art or regional art, often, you know, to like fancy contemporary art people, that's sort of a debased term. Here, I think that kind of work is really, really great, and there's a lot of pride in it, and it's being made at a really, really high level that expresses a rootedness and a sense of place and a sense of culture that is very authentic and very real and cool. I think there's also sort of an aspiration to a contemporary art scene that is gritty and theoretical and involved in dialogues that are global and exist outside of New Orleans. And I think within that, the fact that there is a really strong scene of artist collectives is a completely unique thing in this country. I mean, there really aren't many. There aren't any other cities. Philadelphia is maybe an exception, but my knowledge about the Philadelphia contemporary art scene is a little dated now, so I can't speak to its current reality. But to have the contemporary art scene, especially along St. Cloud Avenue, so sort of colored by these artist collectives, is that's a totally unique thing to New Orleans. And those artist collectives, I think the artists who are participating in that scene are making some of the really interesting work here. And, you know, I love that. I love that that's another thing that makes New Orleans just totally unlike any other American city.
And you think the city is at a place and the community is at a place where we're able to support those artists and sort of nurture them a little bit?
Wouldn't say that. You know, as much as I'd love to be optimistic about that, this is a really, really hard place to be an artist. Mm-hmm. It just is. And, you know, I think every place is a hard place to be an artist. But you have to grind.
Yep. There seems to be my sort of perspective as a sort of a layperson, kind of on the periphery of the scene, in my profession, is that there are a lot of well-heeled folks in this town that are supporters of contemporary art, but they're not necessarily the folks you're talking about aren't seeing that support necessarily. If you dig, you know, like there are a lot of rich people in this town who part of their self-identity, I think, is to be a supporter of visual arts. I mean, I see it at the CAC, you know, the folks who are the biggest donors there, but I don't know that their money's finding its way down to these sort of gritty artist collectives that you're talking about.
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's important to remember within this conversation that the kind of gritty artist collective scene is relatively young here. I think that's largely a post-Katrina phenomenon.
Right.
The sort of really interesting place-rooted, culturally rooted, often racially rooted regional art has been happening for many years here, and that work is also often ignored.
Right.
By collectors. And so I think there's, you know, there are a couple paths here, and I'd like to think that as New Orleans continues to sort of dig its heels in and establish a reputation as being a city that is not just music,
right,
that is not just food, that is not just performing cultures, that we can be real about sustaining a base of creative producers here who work in the visual arts. But, you know, all this is to say, that's part of why we're trying as a staff to do what we're doing, which is involve artists not only in sales and sort of, you know, the I don't want to say conventional path, but like that's one path. I think a path that we're, as an arts council, able to present to artists is one where we're linking artists who have skills and talents to sort of the powers that be in a city that needs infrastructure and needs design and needs build all the time.
That's right.
I think that's a unique position and frame that we can present to our creative producers here.
Yeah. Cool. Well, look. Let's close out.
I want to add one last thing to that. Don't we need buyers, you know, from the big markets in the world, like to make a place a hot zone for artists, you know, so where those people are themselves feeling like, you know, I want to get on a plane and go down to New Orleans and see for myself what's happening, rather than the other way around, which would be that somebody builds up, you know, a kind of, for lack of a better way of saying it, a mid-level reputation in a town like New Orleans, and then eventually has to move, you know, essentially to New York City, right? Or to someplace in Europe where the money is, and where the big art markets are. Don't we need some people who can produce hits, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, yes. And I think we also need for New Orleans to be a place where you don't get demoralized as someone who
sure.
who's making work. And I think that's part of why we're recognizing that we can offer the path that we can offer. There are many paths, and other entities can offer different paths. I think hopefully collectively it comes together as one sort of mega path where artists feel like New Orleans is a viable place to live and work. Because if we miss out on this moment, again, I've only been here for 7 years, so I can't really speak with too much authority, but it does feel like there is a moment here where people want to be here. And people, creative people want to be here, and creative people want to establish roots here. And if we, and I'm using we in a way that I tend to dislike, sort of collectively, like if the community of New Orleans at large doesn't embrace that and create conduits for that scene to exist here long term, then I think it would be a shame.
Yeah, I mean, that's agreed. And Jeff, you really make a good point, because you wonder why there, if you had the right support and advocates and people with the right experience and know-how to create a narrative that New Orleans is a place that you go to as an art buyer. The way that there was this run on Cuba for a long time, and that was probably obviously partly because of the embargo or whatever, but there was a time where people from all over the country were flying to Cuba because they had a reputation that there are these artists that you had, gritty artists that you have to go see this work, you know, and so right. how do you build that reputation in New Orleans, that you've got to get down to New Orleans and check out what these artists are doing. You got to go to them, you know, if you know how to, who's the right PR person to to develop and push that narrative out? You know what I mean? Because it's there, right? I'm sure there's somebody smarter than me that could figure it out, but it takes resources, right?
Yeah, I'm not that person. I wish I had the answers.
I was going to say, it could be you.
I'm not at all sure that I am. But you know, I do, and we do as a staff at the Arts Council what we can to be advocates. I think all of us are really committed to fostering the relationships that we can foster with people at places like Pan American Life, with people at places like the city government, with people at places like the state government, so that we can put artists in play in a real way to be really visible.
Yeah, it really seems like the tourism board and the industry, like government offices plus the tourism board plus the CVB.
That's right.
If there was like almost like a committee, and you had someone like you on that committee, you had someone like Andrea Anderson on that committee, you had the right people in government and the private sector like Pan American and the visual art scene, then maybe there could be this sort of push to put New Orleans on the map as a destination. And of course, the tourism board, the CVB, is going to be behind it, because that's all they want to do. More reasons to sell New Orleans, right? Yep.
I think that that's one thing that could be integrated a little bit more if we're talking about ways that like our municipal and state government can cooperate with cultural iconography in this region. You always see music being pushed out,
right?
So like if you're in Tennessee, in Nashville, and you see the Come to New Orleans commercial, you know, it's like Kermit Ruffins and a handful of like the most famous musicians in New Orleans. You might not know who that is, but then some crawfish, right? So it's usually music and food, right?
Right.
But it can also be art, right? It could be it could be design, it could be fashion, it could be all of those things. For some reason, those things are cordoned off to other places in the world. I mean, there are good reasons for that. Obviously, I don't want to minimize any of that kind of stuff. But there are also things like what you're talking about, Cuba, where places get hot, you know, for a time. And it'd be nice to see that kind of stuff happen, you know, in terms of like the moment that you're talking about. I think Jonathan Ferreira, when he was on the podcast, was really kind of getting into that, because he brought up a term that I had never heard before, the gallerist. And I wasn't sure if that was an actual word. And I looked that up, and I was like, it is. And it's an interesting word, because it doesn't just mean somebody that owns a gallery. It means somebody who owns a gallery, operates the gallery, and also is an advocate at the same time in the private sphere. So that's an element that is almost akin to the incubator music clubs that I'm always trying to defend on the show. It's like it's super, supremely important that people have to have a place to showcase their work. And it's important for people like that to get out and schmooze in places like New York and get those people to take and buy tickets and come down to New Orleans and say, this is some place that you really need to go right now.
Yeah.
Because it's hot. So you want to circle back and just remind people of LunaFet, and we'll just wrap it up on that note?
Happy to. So LunaFet opens tomorrow night, which is Wednesday, December 6th, and then we close on the 9th, which is Saturday night, and it's nightly, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's 6 to 10 p.m., and we'll be out there in public space every night. It's in Lafayette Square. And then installations go all the way down Lafayette Street, which comes right off of Lafayette Square. Bring your family, get something to eat. Every dollar that you spend at LunaFet helps keep it free, which is something that we're really committed to. We kind of view LunaFet as the Arts Council's gift to the city of New Orleans.
Nice. Well, thank you.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, folks, it's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. I don't have anything to plug at this point because Egg Yolk Jubilee is just... We run out of our gigs for now. We're not going to have any other gigs for December. Christmas is right around, the holidays are right around the corner. And so we'll be doing our bookings for Mardi Gras and other things coming up. So stand by for that. The Green Demons don't have any shows coming up either right now. So the music thing is all about just incubating some new tunes right now and getting things together. Joel, you got anything to add, man?
I'm going to plug part two of tonight's episode.
Okay.
So check it out. We're going to have Just Us Chickens. We took our little layoff. We're going to get caught up. I don't know what Spencer's been up to.
Spencer, what's going on? You've been quiet over there, man.
Oh, I haven't been up to anything.
I totally forgot that you shaved your mustache.
The whole beard. That was
the whole beard.
I don't remember having just a mustache for a while.
Yeah, I know, and it's been so long. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Any stand-up shows, man? Nothing?
Well, I've done a couple since our break, but, you know, we'll get into that.
We'll get into that.
ArtsNewOrleans.org seems to be the website where you can get more information on LunaFet, correct?
True facts.
All right.
And the LunaFet app on your smartphone, folks.
That's right. Okay, folks, it's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, part two, coming up next.
Yay,
click
right.
on it. See you then.